You are listening to the podcast of Grace Bible Church Ann Arbor. We are the rescued people of God joining His great restoration project. More information, including sermons in this series, can be found at graceatu.org. Thanks so much for tuning in.
When I began to shop for an engagement ring for the woman who is now my wife, I realized a couple of things very quickly. The first thing I realized was I had no idea what type of ring she would want or even what ring size she had. And so I was basically just going to have to fake it. The second thing I realized was as a seminary student slash youth pastor slash carpenter with some undergrad debt, I was going to have to get very creative about how to afford a rock for that ring. And so I began reaching out to friends and family and just asking people if they had any hookups, like if they knew somebody who was a diamond dealer, a jeweler, who could help me find a really good deal on a nice diamond. And sure enough, somebody gave me the name of somebody. And so I went to this lady's house where she had these different diamonds, and she very kindly began to explain to me exactly how diamonds work and what to look for and what inclusions are and clarity and color and all this stuff I had no idea about. And she began to show me these different diamonds. And as she started with the big ones, and I said, I can't afford it. We got smaller and smaller and smaller. And finally she said, well, here's a really nice one. It's kind of small on the smaller side, but she said it's very, very pure and it's really beautiful and it sparkles nicely in the light. And I said, oh, excellent. Show that one to me. And so she took these long-handled tweezers and she plucked it out of its case and she held it up and she gave me that little eyeglass thing. And so I began to look at it and she explained to me what I was looking at. And as I looked at it, she said, you know what? If you look at this thing in the sunlight, you'll really see it, the sparkles, and you'll see how bright and beautiful this thing is. And I said, okay. So she took the tweezers from me and she walked over near her window by her kitchen and she held it up so that I could see the sunlight come through the diamond. Well, as she did that, the tweezers with which she was holding it kind of slipped sideways like this. The diamond fell from the tweezers and went right down into the floor vent. And when it happened, she looked at me immediately and she had this look on her face like, what just happened? When it happened and we could hear it clink down into the heating duct, she said, oh no. And she began to pull the register off and reach her arm down in to try to see if she could recover the diamond, which she could not. So then we both went down into the basement and she began to pull apart the ductwork, trying to recover this precious thing that had been lost. Well, after a few minutes and using a screwdriver and pulling a bunch of stuff apart, she was, in fact, able to retrieve the lost diamond. I took that diamond and I said, you know, I need to confirm that this is actually valuable with another outside independent jeweler, which I did. And having been through that process, I just knew I needed that diamond. That was the right one because there would be a story attached to it. But I want you to see her face just for a moment. I want you to see her fear, her concern, her grim determination to find the thing that had been found. It was already sitting there and then lost and then found again. Today, we're going to look together at the second half of the golden calf story in the book of Exodus. This is just in this, we only covered the first maybe six verses last week, and we're going to pick up there and we're going to move forward where the people of Israel had Aaron fashion a calf out of gold that they worshiped as some sort of god or representation of God. And Moses was with God up on the mountain. Now, there had been a lot of bad moments in the history of Israel up until this point, and some of those tests in the wilderness that they failed miserably. But this was the worst of the worst. This was the moment which some scholars have connected to Genesis 2 and 3, so that the people were rescued or created. And then this was the moment when Israel was lost, according to some scholars. This was that big of a deal. And as we look at this story, I want you to see Moses' face. I want you to see his concern, his fear, his grim determination to try to retrieve that which had been rescued and then lost. He wanted to then rescue and have it be found again. I want us to think today about him and his role in this story. Now, for some of us, as we look at this story and we think about it, we might relate more to the rebels. We are like the rebels in that we have pursued other gods, the gods of pleasure or achievement or self. And we have rejected the true God and we're on the run. We're lost. And so for those of us who are in that category, and as we read this story, we think about the rebels and that we actually are that rebel, then I want you to realize where exactly this rebellion will lead you. Perhaps for others of us, as we read this story, we'll relate a little bit more to Moses. Yes, we know we were lost once upon a time, but we have placed our faith in Jesus. We are followers of his, and we're no longer like living completely in idolatry or something. We know the true God. But I want us to think about Moses' role in this and how he took great care and made a great effort to go reach out for those who were lost. Because my guess is for many of us that are Jesus followers, we know people who have walked away from their faith, who were growing up in the church, growing up in our homes. They were friends of ours. They were walking down one path with God. And then it seemed like over just a certain period of time where we weren't around them or whatever, we come back and we see them and their lives are totally different. They're in complete rebellion. And some of us have tremendous heartache over these ones that have been lost. For some of us, we are almost defeated. Like, I can't believe this, that this son of mine or this friend of mine or this aunt of mine who used to be such a faithful believer is now walking away from the Lord. And we're almost defeated. Others of us maybe are ready, like that woman, to tear up the floorboards and to go after those people who were lost. Well, whether you are more the rebel in the story or you are more the Moses in the story, I want you to know that the story does not end with just those first 6 or 8 verses. There is more to this story. And so as we look at this, I want to look at it in 3 different parts. I want to look at the realities of rebellion, our desperate need for rescue, and then lastly, I want to encourage us that there is great power in a righteous person. So here's what happens, starting in Exodus verse 6, chapter 32. And they rose up early the next day, and they offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. We talked about this last week. This is not three-legged races or horseshoes. This is like scandalous stuff. And the Lord said to Moses, "Go down, for your people, whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way that I commanded them. They had made for themselves a golden calf and have worshipped it and sacrificed to it. And they said, 'These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt.' And the Lord said to Moses, 'I have seen the people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now, therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, in order that I might make a great nation of you.' But Moses implored the Lord his God and said, 'O Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people, whom you've brought up out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians say, "With evil intent did he bring them out, to kill them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth"? Turn from your burning anger and relent from this disaster against your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore your own self and said to them, 'I will multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven, and all this land that I have promised I will give to your offspring, and they shall inherit it forever.' And the Lord relented from the disaster that he had spoken of bringing on his people." So the first thing I want us to see today are the realities of rebellion. We said last week that while they waited, the people of God had allowed distrust, distorted thinking, and disobedience to creep into their lives. They simply felt like they couldn't wait any longer on Moses to come down the mountain, and they allowed themselves to just run in the opposite direction of the very laws that God had given them. Now, in all likelihood, not every single person was directly involved in worshiping this calf. I mean, it is a massive camp, and there were probably some people who couldn't even see what was going on up at the front. And yet, in many ways, they were all guilty of allowing this thing to happen in their midst. Now, we find out in later verses that there were some Levites who recognized how wrong this was, and Moses called them, and they had to go through, and there was some kind of sword battle of sorts, and there was a plague, and there's some other judgments that came down. But before we get there, notice what we can see about rebellion and those who rebel. The first thing we see in this story is that rebellion might be fun, but only for a time. Sin can be fun. It can give us pleasure. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it. There's a lot of sin in our lives that is just enjoyable to do. Did you notice what happens here? God actually lets Moses know that these people are down there and they are partying. And as they do that, it says Moses, this is verse 15, turned and went down from the mountain with two tablets of the testimony in his hand, tablets that were written on both sides, on the front and on the back, they were written. The tablets were the work of God and the writing was the writing of God engraved on the tablets. When Joseph heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, "There's a noise of war in the camp." But he said, "It is not the sound of shouting for victory or the sound of the cry of defeat, but it is the sound of singing that I hear." As Moses and Joshua began their descent, they heard such a loud and boisterous party that Joshua thought that it was maybe a war going on. Moses recognized it for what it was. It was rebellion of these people having a grand old time. They were feasting, they were doing a bunch of other scandalous things and just making a huge racket. And my guess is if we were to ask them in the midst of that party and the singing, the feasting and everything else, "Hey, is what you're doing right now wrong?" They would say, "No, we're just having fun. We're just having a feast. This is just a good time." And yet they were truly rebelling. Rebellion can be fun. It can sound like singing. In the book of Job, there were some lousy friends who gave some really bad advice. But in one of their really long speeches, one of them, named Zophar, wisely said this, "Do you not know this from of old, since man was placed on earth, that the exalting of the wicked is short, and the joy of the godless but for a moment?" Sometimes when people are rebelling and running away from God, they seem to be having a wonderful time. They're enjoying the party, the feast, the drunkenness, the play, whatever that means. They're enjoying themselves in their sin. It's absolutely the wrong way to decide whether or not you're doing the right thing if it just feels good, because lots of wrong things feel good, and rebellion can feel good, but eventually the rebel is going to realize that there's tremendous pain and scars and trouble on just the other side. I was talking to a recovered addict once about kind of the how his addiction had gone. And one of the interesting things that he said to me was, he said, "You know, at first there was such a rush of pleasure to use these drugs, but over time, I didn't even want to use the drugs.